Just to, I didn't have the privilege of introducing Ernie Khan the last time, but just on a personal level, I have to thank him for coming. I had the pleasure of being in his shiur weekly at Bar-Ilan, and his Torah really sticks in terms of its ingenuity and depth, and I'm very appreciative. I said one of the Sheva Brachot at our wedding as well, and it is definitely a kavod to have you back here. We always enjoy your Torah, so thank you for being here. Anyone else missing? Okay.
So, before you, I just want to head this off at the pass. Before you complain after the class, hold it, did he talk about the topic? So I'll tell you right now, yes, I'm talking about the topic, even though you may not realize it. So,
that's pretty awesome.
Right? But I really am. So let's begin. The topic is Yisachar and Zvulun, failed dream and reality. So in order just to unpack that a little bit so that can make some sense, apparently, and I say apparently, the reality that Yisachar and Zvulun work together is based upon one isolated midrash, which we'll read in a second. But the idea that the two of them can work together, the two of them can create something, and they can become something, you know, as a unit, actually has a, shall we say, there's something beforehand. And that's really what we're going to study. We're going to study the foundation of it, of where all of this comes from, and what that dream was about. Or, shall I already tell you now, what the failed dream was about. So the failed dream was really the foundation of what became the reality. So let's begin. Source number one tells us, it's in a midrash in Bereshit Rabbah, Zvulun l'chof yamin yishkon. So those of you who don't recognize the verse where it's from Parsha Vayichi. It's when Yaakov gives what for some bizarre reason we call brachot. Right? If you look at all 12 of the sons that were so-called blessed, the vast majority of them were not blessings. Yes? Yosef, all right? When we read in Parshat Vayechi about Yosef's blessings and everyone else's Musar, I guess Yehuda was pretty positive as well, but it says a lot of things in passing, which the commentaries are sometimes not all that clear if we're talking about events from the past or the future, or perhaps both. We're talking about things of personality or things about capabilities. It speaks of Zvulun l'chof yamim yishkon, that Zvulun is going to have this ability in order to go riding off on his yacht. Of course, this really means work. I hope we do appreciate that in antiquity, going off on a boat was considered to be incredibly dangerous. And I once saw the statistics, I don't know if somebody just made this up, so I can make it up, but this is what I saw, was that in terms of the longer rides on boats, 3/4 of the people did not make it. Okay, so we can agree that on the statistics, whether they're real or not. It's not like just your luggage didn't make it. I mean, you didn't make it. So Zvulun is going to go riding off. For that reason, you would assume that Zvulun must have had a port. Zvulun lived on a port, which is not all that simple that, in fact, he did. Hare Zvulun kodam li Yisachar, shekein me'achsan Yisachar Zvulun. That he's saying is that we're presenting, or Zachar before Zvulun, is because that, we'll see, because there is something about him which comes first, v'lamakein. Elisha Zvulun osek b'pramakamatia, that he was involved in business. V'Yisachar osek b'Torah. And Yisachar was involved in Torah. Uzvulun ba uma'achilo. And Zvulun came and he gave him food. And I do want to stress that the exact turn of phrase is a very literal one. Uzvulun ba uma'achilo. The image is he came and he literally hands him food. He feeds him. He comes and he feeds him, which is very, very warm and very, very nurturing and is something which is done by will. I'm not going to get into whether this is an ideal for today, whether this is something which is allowed today, whether this is something where one could be forced into supporting somebody who makes the choice of studying Torah. I saw there was another class that dealt with halacha on this. I don't know if this was already or will be. It was already. So then if it was already, then hopefully hopefully you now know that the Rambam was incredibly strict about this and felt there was something very problematic. of somebody living off of donations, and as problematic as the Rambam felt it was in the Mishnah Torah, in his commentary to the Mishnah, which was written when he was younger.
Did his brother support him?
They had a partnership. No, it's not exactly the same. They were partners, and I'll tell you, when his brother died and he went down in a ship, ironically, the Rambam went and paid all of the debts. Okay, so it's not so simple, and it was not taking charitable money. It was, again, they were partnership, and as far as I understand, the Rambam invested. His brother went and did the work, but it was the investment of both of them. So if somebody wants to use the Rambam as the model, anyway, what I start to say in his Perish Mishnayot, he's much stronger on this, and he says, I know that people will disagree with me, but whoever takes money for learning will go to hell. I mean, he does actually use that kind of that language. So let's come back, because over here, again, there seems to be a partnership between the two, and this is something which both of them want. The Torah is and that is Torah. You just have to look at the context in Mishlei, not just the rabbinic interpretation. If you look at, sometimes you have to look up verses, sometimes you look at a larger context. The context over here is the Torah is a tree of life, l'machzikim bo, to those who hold on to it. Yisachar konesu zvulin mevi ba'oniyot u'mocher mevi l'kol tzorko. V'chein Moshe omer, and similarly when Moshe will bless them at the end of the Torah, samach zvulin b'tzeitecha lama sheyisachar bo'olecha. Shelcha hin sha'at misayo leshev behen. That you enable and you help him sit. So this is the model, this is the ideal. Although maybe I'm stretching that by saying it's an ideal. It's a model. It's one particular model. It's a model that works between Yisach and Zvulun. They have an agreement. And one sits and learns, and the other goes out, does business, and he comes and he takes care of him. And as I said, this whole thing is based upon this midrash. So just so you understand that there really is a flow of thought, and not just random thoughts. So first, the question is, so where exactly did Yisach and Zvulun come from? So I know that may sound like a strange question, because we know what you mean, where did they come from? I mean, we know who their parents are, hopefully. We know who their parents are. So the father is the easier one, because the 12 tribes, and they all have the same father, and it's Yaakov. And then when it comes to the mother, you know that it's one out of four, but it's not really one out of four, because six of them have one mother. So then if you don't know and you're a betting person, so then you probably, right? You go towards Leah. And if you guessed Leah, then you're right, because they are children of Leah. But there's something interesting about this. And it's not just that they had this relationship, but I want to just note the verses that speak about their coming into the world. V'yelech Ruvain b'yemei Ketzir Achitim, in verse number 2, that in the time of the harvest of the wheat, Reuven goes, v'yimtzei dudaim besadeh, and he finds dudaim in the field. Now you notice I bold certain words, whatever I'm in the mood, I bold, and I bolded sadeh, and that's important. Who said they were from Lawrence? So I gave a talk in Lawrence last summer in the Rabbi Haines Shul, and I spoke about the dudaim, and I think people were outraged what I said about the dudaim, but that's a whole other talk that's not for today. I spoke about, you've heard me speak about the dudaim. Yes. Right. So, we won't talk about what. I just did. The dudaim have a reputation of being an aphrodisiac. Also, in terms of helping fertility, which very often there assumes to be a connection between the two, but they also were hallucinogenic. So I theorized a lot of the bad decisions Reuven may have made along the way may have been because he was a dudaim addict, okay? Or for some of you, he was doing dudaim, okay? For some reason, when I spoke in Five Towns, all the old BTA guys were saying, yes, we're from the tribe of Reuven. Can we get back to this now?
You brought it up.
He pushed.
It was on all our minds.
Okay. So Reuven goes out to the field and he finds his Dudaim. V'yaveil tam el Leah imo, and he brings him to his mother. V'tomer Rachel el Leah, tnina li midudei b'nech. Now give me these dudaim. Now again, if you understand that these, again, may A, be an aphrodisiac, or B, help in terms of fertility, why Rachel may have wanted them. And that's something which you all know already, because Chazal point that out. Isn't it enough that you've already taken my husband? Now, this itself is a very strange sentence. I don't say it's a strange sentence, because if you were Rachel and you wanted to respond, what would you say? I took your husband? Like, what are you talking about? But lakach the gamet duday b'nei, you're also going to take my son's dudaim. But Tomer Rachel lachin yishkav ima halayla tachat dudai b'neich. And Rachel says, "Fine, why don't you take the dudaim now, and you can spend the night with Yaakov, in exchange for the dudaim of your son." So, okay, elements here which are important. One is we have two sisters, and the two sisters are making a barter. They're making an exchange. They're making some kind of a deal. That's important because, and this is not necessarily the first deal which they've ever made, because the first deal they made is also being referenced over here quite clearly, and that's when Rachel allows Leah to take her husband to be her husband. So this really all is quite complicated. I know some of you thinking this sounds like the Appalachians or something, but this is a soap opera, but this is strange. There's something over here which is strange, and I actually bolded the word Besadeh, which is probably the least interesting word in the whole section over here. But then again, Vayavo Yaakov Minasadeh. So I just want you to know now that Yaakov now comes in from the field by Erev in the evening. Vateitze Leila Kratov, Vatomar Elov Tavo, Ki Sachar Sachartich. That I've earned it. I've made a deal. Within the deal I've made, actually, you've been bartered. You're the one who's been sold, right? They do the ebeni, but yishkavi ma b'lay lahu, but yishmar lokim alayah, but tahar v'teilu di Yaakov min chamishi, v'tom alayah natan lokim schari, asher natati shivchati leishi, but tekreshimo yisachar. So therefore, when I ask, where did this yisachar come from? Well, yisachar came from a bartering, which was based upon a bartering, which, if that's the right word over here, or some kind of deal between two sisters, which had a previous deal between two sisters, and then she comes, and then Yisachar comes into the world, and from this deal something else happens, because she had, what do they call, the secondary infertility, because she had not had any children. She'd said before she had stopped having children, so she has this one child, and then Vater Od Leah, Vater Ben Shishi Yaakov. So when I look at these two, Yisachar and Zvulun, and they work out and they have a deal between the two, so how interesting is that their creation is based upon a deal between the two sisters, which, and I'll just pause at that for a moment. So again, that Yisachar and Zvulun, of all of the 12, that they're the ones that something works out between the two, just realize that there is a history or foundation to this, yes? So to answer your question, okay. So to answer what you said is, A, they got to you. Who's they? All the rabbis, they got to you. Why? Because it never says that, actually. So you have you brought in the PG version that he moved the bed. That's not what it says. No. It wasn't sexual affairs of fathers, that he slept with his father's concubine. That's what it actually says. Why would he do that? Again, and I'd rather stay with the chat for a moment. Why would he do that? He's doing that in order to state that this is a concubine, in order to state that he's the one who's going to inherit. He's the one who's going to be king. Which means in David's family, we find similar things later on, and that most likely is what he's doing, what he's thinking. Of course, the Chazal have somewhat of a cover up over here to say that he's getting too involved. So then the answer is, but yes, according, if you say that he actually just moved the bed, then yes, he got too involved. Over here, though, it's hard to blame him. What did he do? He brought his mother some dudaim. Yudim, by the way, if you look them up, you know what they are in English. They're mandrakes. They're really scary. Look them up on Google. Look pictures of mandrakes. They're really, really... And even before Harry Potter, they were scary. So I'm probably the most... The individual who's the least learned it over here because I've never read Harry Potter. I've listened to my wife read it to my kids over there, but I've never read it. But I've heard it's very good. Yes, right. Which is a further complication to this. I know. We'll leave that then have a chance of getting where we want to get to. Yes, they both come. That's why I stress. The Torah says after the fourth son is born, after Yehuda is born, it says that Leah stopped having children. So now she has children again. And gets to do that in work. They work both of her, and they worked for, and they worked for Rachel, and they may have worked for Reuven. Yes.
In which case, was the male consuming it, or did the female consume it? In which case, then why was Rachel bothering for it because she didn't have a kid until quite some time later?
Not quite some time later, but anyway, you're showing far too much interest in the Dudayim.
No, but seriously.
The question is this a one-time thing? Are they just pretty flowers? Is there something deeper over here involved in it? And even if I say, again, just you want to work out the timeline to be clearer, I could just say very simply, maybe Reuven did this occasionally. That was just the one thing. There's Dudim around, maybe occasionally he would take them and whatever. To be more specific, Rachel wanted them, and let's assume that they work. As far as Leah goes, did Leah get any of them or not? I don't know. Leah seems to feel that she has this child because she has done something else, which, by the way, as you pointed out, takes it... She doesn't want to give Rachel credit for anything. It's not like, you know, you traded, but of course that's the background. But the whole thing I want you to get out of this is one point, and hopefully you got that point. And what's this? That Yisachar and Zvulun are brought into the world as a result of a deal. That's all that I wanted you to see. And it's not just that... Many, many years later, the tribes of Yisachar and Zvulun, they say, hey, you know, maybe we can work together, do something together, and be partners and whatever, is that there's a deal over here which is struck. I will hopefully have time to get to some comments of Rav Hirsch before we finish today. Rav Hirsch on this section, it's worthwhile to look up, Rav Hirsch on this section claims that this whole conversation between Rachel and Leah was said in an offhanded, loving, jovial way, and that there's no bite to it whatsoever. That they got along so wonderfully, and they were the best of friends, and they were kidding around. And then this wasn't about, oh, you took my husband. No, that they were completely, completely friendly. Whether he can convince you that that's the fact or not, that's I guess up to how good he is when you read it and how where you come from. Okay, I can stop now. That's great. But now give me a little. Let's try here a little bit. The first thing I want to point out is that Yaakov coming in from the field, that Yaakov comes in from the Sadeh, even though, you know, we're used to it. I mean, for all these years, Yaakov has been involved in working and so on. So that's who Yaakov is. But of course, it's not who Yaakov is. Because in order to really understand the irony, or I said the irony of Yaakov coming in from the field, or why that perhaps would have been the last thing that we would have suspected, we need to go all the way back. So all the way back, we'll start by source number 3. And this is when Rivka has... Also, she suffers through infertility. She's married for 20 years. We have no idea, despite what you've been told, how old she was when she got married. Yes?
Right.
We have no idea how old she was when she got married. And she... She gets pregnant, and she suffers greatly. And it says then she goes to seek God, which itself tells us perhaps something about Rachel's own inner world. And then we have in source number 3, she goes and she seeks God. And then we have Vayomer Hashem La. This is a very difficult verse, because despite how clear it is, we have the commentator saying, no, he told Shem or Aver and not her, and God didn't talk to her. Well, I'll just read the words. Vayomer Hashem La. God said to her, Shnei goyim bevitnech. There are two nations within you, Ushne le'umim mimeyach yipareidu. And there are two different peoples who are going to go in two different directions. Ula'omi lom yamotz. And this is going to be the way the Gemara understands it, sort of like a seesaw. One goes up, one goes down. And they're not going to be together. V'rav yavot sa'ir. And at the end of the day, it's the younger one who's going to be successful. Well, that sort of ruined the book. You know, I don't know how many of you ever, like, before you start a book, you look at the very end to see how the book ends. I mean, would you want to do that with your kids as well?
No.
To know which is going to be the one who'll be wealthy? Listen, I'm going to take care of this one. You're on your own right now, right? What a horrific thing for a parent to know how the story ends. She didn't ask for that. She wanted the ultrasound. That's all she wanted to know, that everything was okay. I don't know. Any of you, there are people who go for ultrasound. I just want everything's okay. Oh, you're having a boy. I never asked you for that. I don't need to know any more than that. Anyway, God, I guess that's the problem with seeking out God. God gives all the information. Now, this is going to begin a wonderful, dysfunctional relationship, which any of you who feel that you have those, it's right. We have it right over here. The Rivka Yitzchak Yaakov Esav relationship is going to be completely dysfunctional, but part of the reason it's dysfunctional is because they have different pieces of information, which means Rivka has literally inside information, which she's going to have for the rest of her life, and Yitzchak has different information, or at least different dreams, which means Rivka knows what's going on and Yitzchak has dreams what's going on, and you can't compare one person's dreams with other person's knowledge, and now we begin to understand what our problem is. Yeah. What I could say, however, is that Rivka has no relationship whatsoever with Esav. Esav, who is known for his mitzvah kivud av v'eim, has no kivud for his mother, only has honor for his father. There is no relationship. Again, when you want to analyze this whole parsha, the right way of doing it is to analyze all the relationships, and I really don't want to say them all right now, but you have the Yitzchak Rivka, you also have the Rivka Yitzchak, which may not be the same. You have the Yaakov Rivka, you have the Yaakov Yitzchak, and the reverse. You have the Esav Yitzchak and the Esav Rivka, and you have also the reverse. And I'm saying there are so many layers over here of these relationships, but I will point out that when Esav marries two girls, and this is part of Esav's failing, his superficiality, his father got married when he was 40 years old, he gets married when he's 40 years old, he married somebody whose name is Yehudit, so you can try to convince yourself that she's Jewish, but she's not. She's a Canaanite, and the very reason that Yitzchak married who he'd married was not to marry a Canaanite. So he marries two people right away, which by the way itself is really quite troubling, because the one who originally marries two people, not because of problems in fertility or taking a second wife because of issues like that, but that all the way goes back to Lemech, and the Midrash tells us that the reason Lemech did it was because he married one in order to have children and the other one in order to be beautiful. I mean, by the way, people still do that today, but they don't do it at the same time. But in the olden days, we're told that Lemech did that, which, by the way, is absolutely sexist in the sense of saying that a woman is only there for certain usage, rather than saying for as an entire being. As a partner, no, she is for this or she is for this, and that Esav goes and does this, there's something which should be incredibly disturbing about this. Okay, pause. It says that this caused murat ruach, bitterness, in both Yitzchak and Rivka, in both of them. And later on, Rivka's going to complain to Yitzchak how upset she is. But later on, it'll say, and Esav saw how much it troubled his father. And then it says he takes another wife. Never says that he sees that troubles his mother. So I'll say it again. I can point out to evidence that there is no Rivka-Esav-Esav-Rivka relationship, and I think it all goes back to this point. So whether I can read the verse differently, the reality of what's going to take place afterwards is one which I think that Rivka is very much influenced by this inside information that she has. See, I mentioned Rav Hirsch before, and as I said, I'll try to mention him again. There is whenever we get to this week's that parsha, Toldo, you always have somebody quoting Rav Hirsch and saying something which I think is preposterous, and that is, he says, "Oh, look how Rivka and Yitzchak—they were terrible parents," and the reason they were terrible parents is they just treated both their kids the same. They treated them exactly the same, and that's why Esav turned out to be like Esav. So then today, any kid with And listen, let's be honest. Schools are terrible places, at least for kids. Maybe for adults as well. I don't think they're great for teachers either, but they're terrible places in the sense is that you have to gather a bunch of people together who have different thinking approaches, different styles, different skills, and try to find one level. I don't know what level you aim for, the high level, the middle level, the low level. Either way, most of the people in the room are not going to be happy. The question is, how many people are you going to frustrate? So therefore, this approach of Rav Hirsch has become the statement about how we need to treat people differently and so on, and look how Rivka and Yitzhak, they caused Esav to be this, so they treated them exactly the same. So the funny thing is that I have another teaching from Rav Hirsch, which I said I hope I get to, where he himself says the exact opposite, and he brings evidence about how wonderful a parent actually Yitzhak is. Rivka, as I said, it's hard to say. So far, twins, they're going to be two separate people. I want to make this easy for you because we're going to run out of time and Tamar has to teach soon. If Rivka knows they're going to be two different nations, what does Yitzhak know? So just quick, easy answer, he doesn't necessarily know that. So what would his default thinking be? That they're one nation, right? Why would you think that your two kids will be two different nations? So Rivka's knowledge is going to be the exact opposite of Yitzhak's, well, failed dream. Yitzhak's dream is that they're going to be one nation. Okay, so that's just as a starting point. Source number 4, and here we again will get to our dysfunctionality. Vayetzi harishon admoni kol aderet se'ar vayikru shmo Esav. They named him Esav. Vacharechen yatza achiv vayado ochezet ba'ekev Esav vayikra shmo Yaakov. And he calls him Yaakov, so again, anytime you have a lack of symmetry, it causes us to note. And they both call him Esav, but only one of them calls him Yaakov, and the one is Yitzchak. Which is interesting because you can go through the whole Parsha and you will never find Rivka ever calling him Yaakov. Yitzchak, you can find him calling him Yaakov, referring to him as Yaakov. You will never find her call him Yaakov. She never does. She calls him Bini. Never Yaakov. Now those of us who, again, have cheated and know what happens later on also know that later on he will get another name. And he'll become Yisrael. So that itself is interesting that his father calls him this, but there is this other name which will at some point come out, which also somewhat troubles us. Why does he need two names? Okay, Avram needs two names, or maybe Sarah needs two names because they converted. So you have before and after. Avram before, why does Avram get a new name? Because he had a Brit that day. The day that people have a Brit, they get a name. Right? And I'll say that's the day that he becomes Jewish. I'll say the same thing about Sarai becoming Sarah. So they're having two names doesn't surprise me at all. But why in the world should Yaakov have to get another name later on? That's something which is a little bit stranger. Let's continue. Source 5. V'yigdlu ha'narim v'yi'esav ish yodei etzayid ish sadeh. So our whole introduction in terms of Yaakov from the field and Reuven coming from the field. So now I hope that you note something, that the field is actually the domain of Esav. Ish yudei etzayid ish sadeh. V'Yaakov ishtam yoshev ohalim. And Yaakov is a man of tents. So if you're Yitzchak and you look at these two sons that you have, I would assume that you note something that's interesting. Again, I can't miss it. I don't see how Yitzchak can miss it. But then again, when we deal with our own kids, then I'm brilliant with other people's kids, right? So maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. He has two sons. He has twins. V'yigidlu ha'ne'arim, Rashi there brings in Midrash that when they were kids, no one could tell the difference, which is where Rav Hirsch makes his whole statement from. The Midrash that Rashi, I believe, is citing from actually says that they were no difference, not just in terms of looks, but in terms of behavior. Their behavior was very, very similar when they were young. But as I said, I'm not convinced that's pshat. V'yigidlu ha'ne'arim, and it became very clear that Esav is a man of the field and Yaakov is a man of the tents. So if you go back and you look at Avram's generation, there was also a man who was a man of the tents at that time, and that's Avraham. And there was also a man who is a man of the field, or Ish Yodei Etzayid, and the man who is Ish Yodei Etzayid is, of course, Nimrod, Avram's nemesis, if you will. And if you look at the next page, source number 6, Ukush yalad et Nimrod, hu hachel yod gibor ba'aretz. He was somebody who was very strong, powerful. Hu ya gibor tzayid lefnei Hashem. And what the lefnei Hashem means over here is very challenging for us. Al ken yemar ki Nimrod gibor tzayid lefnei Hashem. In Divrei Hayamim, however, in Source 7, V'kushi alat Nimrod, hu echel liot gibor ba'aretz, and it leaves out any lifnei Hashem in the retrospective. So Avram Avinu has a nemesis who's called Nimrod. Nimrod actually tries to kill him, right? According to at least the Midrashic narrative, he's the one who's involved in throwing Avram into the furnace, which, by the way, may actually be pshat in the Chumash. When God says, I'm the one who saved you, me'ur kasdin, from the fire of kasdin. So the one who was involved in throwing him in was Nimrod. And Nimrod is this great, powerful individual, and Avram is this man of the tents. And we would like to understand, maybe we're wrong, but we'd like to understand that a man of the tents has the connotation of being somebody involved in the spiritual versus somebody who's involved in the physical. So now, look at this very interesting genetic surprise which Yitzchak is presented with. He has two sons who are twins. One of them reminds him of his father, Avraham. The other one reminds him of Nimrod. And they're both growing up in his family. And they're both growing up in his house. So let's just continue. I want to read, skip that someplace. And we're told then that, back in source number 5, the second part there, Vayehav Yitzchak et Esav kitzayid befiv, v'rifko hevet et Yaakov. So just to finish up our dysfunctionality, over here, Yitzchak loves Esav, but it says he loves him kitzayid befiv. Rivka hevet et Yaakov. So the more natural of those two is Rivka loving Yaakov, but you're going to say she loves him because of the inside information. But if you hear it, it actually says that she loves him without any qualification, without any reason. So what's more normal is, you know, you ask, why do you love your kid? Because it's my kid. But the first part is very troubling, that Yitzchak loves Esav kitzayid befiv. And I know the various interpretations, as you do, that he fooled him or he tried to fool him. The pshat over here is that he loves him because he is a hunter. So he loves him. Let's look at Rashi kitzayid befiv, source number 9. Yodei tzayid latsud v'laramot et aviv befiv. He fooled his father. V'shalu abba heich ma'asrim et hamelech v'tateven. Kasuvur aviv shu medaktik b'mitzvot. He would ask how you take Maaser from either salt or from Tevin, and he was convinced then that he was somebody who was very careful about mitzvot. Yitzchak, though, has some kind of an affinity for the field, and that's before his kids are born in source number 8. The Yetzah Yitzchak Lasuach B'Sadeh. The Yitzchak goes out, and that's where he goes to pray. And then V'Yisa'inem V'Yarvineg Malim Ba'im, and that's when he sees the camels coming with his wife, and so on. So, we now have a very good sense of our dysfunctional family. Rivka has inside information. Yitzchak has his dream. Rivka loves Yaakov unconditionally. Yitzchak loves Esav because he brings him food or because he's fooled him. So, everything, therefore, is wonderful. Source number 10, and this will hopefully begin to help us to understand properly. Vayazid Yaakov Nazid. Yaakov was making food. Vayavo Esav min hasadeh, and Esav comes from the field. Vuhu ayef, and he's tired. Vayomer Esav el Yaakov, haliteni na min ha'adom hadom hazeh. Please pour, Rashi actually tells you haliteni is a technical term for feeding a camel, which was interesting because the camel was mentioned right before. What do you all know about a camel? A camel has one kosher sign and one non-kosher sign. What's the kosher sign? What's the non-kosher sign with the camel? So it has one kosher sign and one non-kosher sign. So the Kabbalists understand that that's already a hint that she will carry two children, one that will be kosher and one that wouldn't be kosher. There's one kosher sign, one non-kosher sign. And over here, he can, going back to this camel, he's saying, you know, could you just pour the food into my mouth? Now, there's something over here which is troubling. And what's troubling was the midrash that we read in the very beginning. What was the midrash in the very beginning about Yisachar and Zvulun? What was the relationship that we're told between the two of them? That Zvulun ba'o machilo. Zvulun comes and he feeds him. Zvulun, the one that works, is his responsibility to come back and to take care of his brother and to feed him. So over here, we're told that Esav comes in and says, feed me. And he actually, he doesn't say, feed me, because of what you think it says? Because normally you would say, feed me because I am hungry. It doesn't say that. It says, feed me because I'm tired. Ki ayef anochi. Now, tiredness could be physical. Tiredness can also be emotional. It could be depression. The rabbis also tell you that underneath the surface over here is that Avraham died that day, and essentially he gave up. It was his first dealing with death, and he said, what difference does it make? What difference does it make? Why should I try so hard to be good? Look, good people die. But over here, he's tired. And maybe he's tired of impressing his parents. Maybe he's tired of trying to be the person that his father wants him to be. And I want to go back to his father for a second. Why does his father love him? It says, Kitzayid Bifiv. See, in my mind, that's the complete opposite of what Rav Hirsch at least said regarding he treats them both the same. No. He loves Esav Kitzayid Bifiv, which means he has two sons. One is like Nimrod and one is like Avraham. And you would think that Yitzchak should love the one who's like Avraham. But he says, okay, if I can take someone like Nimrod, and even with Nimrod, there's this hint of Lefnei Hashem. If you could take the power of Nimrod, and you can harness it, and you can turn that into something which can help serve God, and you create a partnership between Avraham and Nimrod. Again, instead of Avraham and Nimrod being the nemesis of one another and trying to kill the other one, what would happen if the two of them can possibly work together? And Yitzchak looks at his kids and says, that's essentially what God gave me. God gave me a kid who's like Avraham, and that's Yaakov. And I'll just say it now. There was never any question in Yitzchak's mind about the greatness of Yaakov, and I'll try to prove that as we move on. But on the other hand, when he's looking at this kid who reminds him of Nimrod, so he says, okay, go out and hunt, and he brings him food. Well, I'll explain this more as we go on. But I would imagine this is the way the family works. This is the dynamic. Yitzchak is preaching to the two of them, you guys have to work together. Again, this goes back to our Yisachar and Zvulun story. You guys need to work together. That's the dream. Because if the two of them work together, essentially they're unstoppable. The greatest physical force in the world and the greatest spiritual force in the world, you bring them together, they're unstoppable. That's the dream that Yitzchak's have. You know, it's hard. It's hard to be a Jew sometimes. It's hard to be someone who's weak, a nation that's weak. You know, we had a hard time in 2,000 years of exile. Can you imagine if we, during that time, had an incredibly strong army that was protecting us all the way through all those years of exile? I mean, things would have looked a little different. So he's looking at Yaakov, who Yaakov is basically very, very spiritual and a man of the tents and somebody who's weak compared to his brother. And he's looking and saying, well, if these two can work together, this will essentially be an unstoppable force. And I'll even say it in messianic terms, this is what's going to change the world. And at the same time, Rivka is saying to Yaakov, ignore your father, ignore your brother, your brother's a loser, and you're going to have to do it yourself. Don't trust in anybody else. Don't think someone's going to feed you. Don't think anybody's taking care of you. You have to do it for yourself. So now, isn't being Yaakov a little bit more complicated than you ever realized? He's being brought up with two conflicting visions. A vision of partnership and a vision of having to do it on his own, which is why this is such an important scene. And I hope you all realized that this scene is completely mirrored by the two other scenes that we spoke about in terms of Rachel and Leah. Both in terms of Rachel and Leah changing places and trading the older one for the younger one and so on, which is essentially what takes place over here. And it's also the trade which takes place when Esav comes in from the field. Now Yaakov comes in from the field. Which means the creation of Yisach and Zvulun is the side of the Rachel and Leah fulfilling the same type of a relationship which happens between Yaakov and Esav. Of course, there's a major difference between the two, which is why that other comment of Rav Hirsch was so interesting, because here there's not a good one and a bad one. Over here, there are two which end up having to work together. That's what Am Yisrael is. They have to end up working together. So it's not the same where one is going to be chased away. If I'll ruin a lot of things for you now, because otherwise I can't wait to say everything, wait, leave everything for the end, otherwise we'll never have an end. But one of the greatest Kabbalists of the 19th century was somebody who's known by his book, who's known as the Leshem. His name was Revel Yashiv. He had a grandson whose name may have been Revel Yashiv. Actually, his grandson, Revel Yashiv, was his daughter's son, and they took the... You know this? Yeah. Ah, so that's interesting. Revel Yashiv took his...
It was probably not for feminist reasons. It was probably in order to be included on the same visa to get out of and to get over into Israel. But Rabbi Yosher was the greatest Kabbalist of the 19th century, and he was Rav Kook's teacher in Kabbalah. And Rav Kook arranged for the grandfather for Rabbi Yosher to come over, and he came over with his daughter, son-in-law, and grandson, the 10-year-old, if I'm not mistaken, Rav Eliyashiv, and Rav Kook was his Masada Kedushin subsequently. Okay. Anyway, Rav Eliyashiv says, or the Leshen says, that the Yaakov having to marry Rachel and Leah was because that Yaakov eventually has to lead two lives. He has to lead the life of Yaakov, and he has to leave the life of Esav. But it's not exactly the life of Esav. It's the life of Esav, which becomes elevated, and the power, when it becomes elevated, gets a new name to it, and that name becomes Yisrael. Which means the Yaakov-Yisrael divide is Yaakov leaving two lives, and therefore, you know, again, we've all heard this midrash. It was supposed to be the younger for the younger and the older for the older, but there are going to be repercussions of what's going to take place right now. And the repercussions are going to be far more than I think that any of us could have imagined when we read this. So let's just now read it again. Pasuk Lamed Aleph in source 10, Vayomer Yaakov Michra ki yomit bechortecha li. Sell me your rights as the firstborn. What makes Yaakov say this? I mean, if you're an anti-Semite, it's very easy, right? A Jew can make money, so therefore, right, rip off your own brother. That's not what's going on over here. And it's not what's going on by what's said in the next couple of lines. It's exactly the moment that Yaakov has clarity regarding the fight between his mother and his father. His father's vision and the conflicting vision of his mother. His father's vision is that you're going to be partners, and Esav's going to be the one who takes care of the physical things. He's going to go out to the field. He's going to bring food. He's going to be a hunter. He's going to bring food. He'll take care of you. And Esav comes back from the field, exhausted. I can't do this anymore. I'm tired. What does he say? He says, I'm going to die. V'yomer Esav v'nei anochi olech lamut. Again, that's the echo of maybe Avram had died that day. I'm going to die. What do you mean you're going to die? You're young, strong. This is total depression. He can't live up to these expectations anymore. He can't live up to the dream that his father wanted. What is that his father wanted? You be the new, improved, the Nimrod 2.1, but the Nimrod 2, or 2.0, the Nimrod 2.0 is going to be the one who's going to be really, this Lefnei Hashem is going to be manifest within him. You're going to be taking care of all the physical needs, and therefore Yaakov, your partner, will be taking care of all the spiritual needs. But when he comes and he says, I can't do this anymore, at that moment Yaakov says to him, do you understand what this means? If I give you food and I take care of you, it essentially means that you're giving up your father's dream, but you're also giving up your responsibility. I'm willing to take it, but you're giving it up. And Esav says, what do I need it for? V'yom Yaakov hishvali kayom v'shvalo v'yimkor et b'chorto li'Yaakov v'Yaakov v'netan l'Esav lechem u'nezid adashim v'yachal v'yech v'yokom v'yelach. And the conclusion, v'yivez Esav et b'chora. He had detested to be the firstborn, the responsibility, and so on. Which means this was the best deal he ever made. He got rid of this thing which was weighing heavily on him, and he got a bowl of chillant. This was a win-win as far as he was concerned. But now I'm going to go back again. As far as Yaakov was concerned, I'm not yet going to say that this ruined his whole life, but it definitely changed the trajectory of his life. Everything in Yaakov's life, you know, if Yaakov had Facebook, his status would always be complicated. Every relationship, complicated. Everything is complicated with Yaakov. But where does it begin to become complicated at this moment? Because what he may not realize right now, what happened is, he just now took both sides. He's now Yaakov and he's Esav. He has the responsibility of both, which means the scene that we had before where Yisach and Zvulun come into the world is the scene Vayovo Yaakov min Asadeh. And for us, that was perfectly natural, but it's not perfectly natural. Because who is he? He's Yaakov Ish Tam Yoshev Ohalim. He wasn't supposed to be that person. He was supposed to be somebody else, but now you realize the ramifications of him being the person who he ends up becoming. In source 11, Vayavo Aviv, Vayomor Aviv, Vayomi Neni, Mi Ata Bni, Vayomi Yaakov Aviv, Anochi Esav Bechorecha, Asiti Kasher Dibarti, like Kum Na Shiva. By the way, notice the word Na. Please sit up. Please sit up. Later on, when Esav is going to come in, and Esav is going to get quite upset. look at source. Stay, keep an eye on that source, but look at 15 for a second. Vayaskam humitamim, vayavola aviv, vayomal aviv yakum avim. Get up. Do you notice the different way that they talk? Get up. Yaakov says, Dad, please get up. It's not the same talk. Vayavola aviv, vayomar avi, Dad. Vayominini miyatabini, right away, who are you? It's not the tone of the voice. Yes, you all know the Beit HaLevi, the most preposterous commentary in any pasuk in the Chumash, who obviously when he was a kid he watched too much Get Smart. The Beit HaLevi says, when it's, okay, we'll get to the verse in a second, when he says, Hakol kol Yaakov adayim de Esav, I have a simple question. Did he end that verse with a question mark or with an exclamation point? Hakol kol Yaakov adayim de Esav. Was that question or exclamation point? If it's a question mark, wow, Kol Yaakov, and yes, this doesn't make any sense, so then he should have stopped right there and not given the blessing. You're blind, you're vulnerable, you don't know who's sitting in front of you, you don't give the blessing. Which leads me to say that he must have said it with exclamation point. Kol Yaakov, you're dying to Esav. So the Beit HaLevi says like this, that Esav didn't trust Yaakov because he said he already fooled me once. So if Yaakov comes in and tries to dress up like me, he's going to obviously try to act like me, he's going to talk like me. So Esav says, how are you going to know that it's me when I come in? Because I'm going to talk like Yaakov, and therefore you're going to know that it's me. So therefore when Esav, right? But Yaakov knew that Esav was going to talk like him, so Yaakov came in, and he spoke like Esav, imitating Yaakov. The Beit HaLevi actually writes this. Right? The old double impersonation trick. But he's addressing a point which is incredibly important. Does that sentence end with a question mark, or does that sentence end with an exclamation point? So obviously, it's an exclamation point, which means, and again, you're blind, Yitzchak, and what have you been doing over here? You've been trying to tame Esav. Esav is wild. Esav is Nimrod. You're trying to tame him. So think about what you just now did. You tell him, can you go bring me some food from the field? Right? Can you go bring me food from the field? Just think about that a second. Yitzchak's connection with the field. Go bring me some food from the field so I can bless you. Which means this is why he's a wonderful parent. He knows what Esav's capabilities are and what his weaknesses are. So he's, how many of you are the kids in class? They say, oh, go make photocopies for me. Go to the office. Go do this for me. Okay, you don't have the other capabilities. So at least do something that you can feel good about yourself. But listen to what he says. I know that Esav is a man of the field. I know that Esav is a hunter. So when Yitzchak tells Esav, bring me food, he just now turned his hunting into a mitzvah. Should I say that again? Hunting, which could be absolutely a terrible thing, he just turned into a mitzvah. Why? Because Yitzchak is a great parent. He sees that this is what his kid's capability is. Please go do that thing that you do and do it for me. And now it became a mitzvah. Which means if Esav is really terrible, the Nodeb Yehuda has a tshuva about hunting. And he ends up saying, well, technically it's okay, which, by the way, is a terrible tshuva for all people who think that you have to be a vegetarian because of Tzar Balechayim. He's not concerned about Tzar Balechayim if there is some kind of human gain from it, which, and by the way, the threshold is very, very low. I'm sorry. But, he says, but you're behaving like an Esav. I mean, he just doesn't like it on a moral level, which means if you're going to tell me that there's human gain from this because I feel it cathartic when I kill animals, you have a problem. So over here, what is it that Yitzchak does? He says, you're going to be a hunter anyway. Maybe he hunted because he liked it. Maybe he enjoyed it. No. I'm turning your hunting into a mitzvah. I'm turning it into kivut av, and I'm going to turn it into a blessing. Go bring me food. So now he comes back, but the only one problem is it's not really him. Yaakov comes back and he says, Who are you? Vayom Yaakov Aviv, Anochi Esav Achar Asher Asei. By the way, you realize what he's doing? Kitzayid Bepiv, that interpretation that Rashi gave that we weren't sure is really correct, is because he fooled him with words. So now you realize the one who actually is fooling him with words is Yaakov, which means that Yaakov now has somehow found the ability of channeling his inner Esav. Continue. But nonetheless, he says, Dad, please get up. That you can bless me. God is the one who did it. So now Esav, as far as Yitzchak is concerned, is talking about God. If you're Yitzchak, you're convinced at this moment that you've succeeded. Esav is talking nicely. Dad, please get up. He's bringing food. Why are you here so quick? God allowed me. God helped me. So you're convinced that it's true. Vayomer Yitzchak el Yaakov, go come, let me see it. And finally he says at the end here, Vayomer, kol kol Yaakov yidayim de Esav. The voice, the words, look at Esav, is that he has become so much more Yaakov-like. It's at this moment that Yitzchak is convinced that his plan is going to work and the two of them are going to have a partnership, because the Esav, the hunter, is now speaking about God. You can't, meaning, if you go back a step, Yitzchak knows the role of the hunter who's going to take care of Yaakov can't be something that you just subcontract to anybody. He has to be somebody who appreciates what his partner is. He has to be somebody who values it, who's somebody who sees the spiritual side of this. And if Esav is now a moral hunter, I know that sounds funny for you, but he's going to be the moral soldier. He's going to be the person who has a very high ethical standard. He's somebody who speaks about God. Then as far as he's concerned, he succeeded. And that's why he says, Akol kol Yaakov v'dayin de Esav, which means me, Yaakov, we have succeeded in taming the shrew. We've succeeded in turning Esav into somebody else. But little did Yitzchak realize at that point is that what has really happened over here is quite the opposite. It's not that he has taken his wild son and turned him into a yeshiva bacher in any sense. Rather, he's taken his yeshiva bacher, who now has shown he has many, many more capabilities than he ever imagined. I want to quickly run through a couple of sources, and then we'll finish up, just and try to back this up a little bit. In source number 12, it says that he kissed him and he smelled his clothing, and it says it smells like the sadeh asher becho Hashem, that now the field is blessed, which the Midrash in source 3, Rashi cites it as well, says it's like Gan Eden. Well, it's like we're back in Gan Eden. Because again, this is a perfected world. Yitzchak believed the world was going to be perfected now when you bring the two of them together. In source 14, and here's the other thing to pay attention to, and again, I'm going to say this slowly, even though we are running out of time, slowly, to make sure we get this. Yitzchak gives a blessing to Yaakov when he thinks he's Esav. Subsequently, he gives a blessing to Esav when he knows that it's Esav. Subsequently, he gives a blessing to Yaakov when he knows that it's Yaakov. The blessing he gives Yaakov when he thinks he's Esav is source 14, Vayitain lecha Elokim mitala shamayish manei aretz urov dagon v'tirosh yavducha amim v'yishtachavu lecha le'umim havi gvir la'achecha v'yishtachavu lecha b'nei imecha orucha aror mevrecha baruch. Aside from the last four words, which remind you of something to do with Avraham, all of this is a blessing for stuff, wealth, and power. Source 15, when Esav comes in, Vayichrad Yitzchak, he realizes, and he says, no, but he'll be blessed. Source 16, he says, Dad, don't you have a blessing for me? He goes, no. Your brother came and took your blessing. There was only one blessing that you could have had, and that was it. Then, when Yaakov comes in, before he's going to leave, he gives him a blessing. Now, this is the Yaakov who's already ripped him off. This is the Yaakov who already, you know, stole the other blessing. And what does he say to him? And I will go one step further and say, this was the blessing that was always meant to go to Yaakov. V'kel shakayiv arechotcha v'yifrcha v'yorbecha v'yite l'kalamim, a blessing for children. V'yitain l'cha et birkat Avraham l'cha l'zarecha itach. You will have the blessing of Avraham. Of course, he's the man of the tents, just like Avraham. L'rishtachat eretz megurecha shenatkan l'kim l'Avraham, and you will receive the land of Israel. Which means the land of Israel he did not give to Esav. What he was going to give Esav was power, wealth, power. That's what he was going to get. And I do want to end up with a couple of thoughts. One, later on, when Yaakov runs away and he's, you know, underneath the clouds and God blesses him, God reiterates this blessing. Children, land of Israel. He never reiterates the blessing that he stole. He never reiterates that you're going to get this blessing of lots and lots of wealth and lots of power. He doesn't say that to him. Could be Rivka, what the whole plan was never to give the blessing to Yaakov, was just to prevent Esav from having that blessing. Because it's too much power for somebody who is not focused on doing the right thing. In sources 18, 19, and 20, and we're not going to read them all, but look at 18 where it's bold. This is Rav Hirsch, and he talks about, he has two sons. Sorry, from the beginning. Esav akoach hachamri, Yaakov akoach haruchani. Yodei Yitzchak ye'uma zkuka l'shnei hakivunim. He knew the Jewish people need both of them. Avhu kinered n'edvah ki rav b'kocho hachamri, yavod l'tzir v'lachalosh mimenu. Ach kisavoria Yaakov, she'esav Yaakov yekaimu et tudat avrim b'kochot mishutafim. He believed the two of them were supposed to work together as partners. Later on, he says, when he tells his son to go get me food, he says what I said before. So now you're hunting has turned into a blessing. This is in the second one in source 19, two-thirds of the way down. Hishtamesh hapam bikli umanatecha kedei lasot chesed im adam, kedei lasod et levavol shel zaken. Tuchosh gam ata besipuk haba lo ladam, b'sha shehu mahaneh et zulato. Turn your hunting into chesed. Feed your old father with the food that you hunt. And that's, again, what I'd said before. So it's really interesting that Rav Hirsch is the one who says, oh, look what a terrible parent Yitzchak is, because he treated both of his kids the same. Well, he really doesn't. And Rav Hirsch knows that he doesn't. I'm really not convinced that even when Rav Hirsch said this, that he was talking about Yaakov and Esav, or he was talking more about educators in his own generation. Source 20 is where we'll end today. V'inyan birkat Yitzchak sharatza litnala Esav, niraki birkat Yaakov yimuchedet elav, kamo shebukula basa birkat Avraham. And we'll skip a little bit. Avalzua bracha hiliot gvir la'achiv. Ki Yaakov ve'esav yimiyuchadim l'shnei olamot. Esav ish sadeh v'yaakov ish ohalim. That they were two different worlds. One was the world of the field, the other the world of the tents. Vim hoya esav mitakin ma'asav. Had Esav improved his ways, hoya hu kamo zvulun im yisachar. The relationship, and this is what Yitzchak had dreamed, the two of them would have been like Esav and Yisachar. So what was the point of this whole exercise today? To say that this dream of Yisachar and Zvulun of working together, it has a history to it. What was the history to it? Well, first of all, the very creation of the two, the birth of the two, had to do with this barter. But it had to do with after Yaakov became a man of the field. Yaakov becoming a man of the field was not a very simple thing. Yaakov becoming a man of the field was because of the barter, which he had actually done with his brother. This dysfunctional family with Rivka having information, and it was necessary, perhaps, you know, you asked before, Rivka could not tell Yitzchak because otherwise Esav would not have had any parent. If they both knew. And therefore, out of chesed for her son, okay, let Yitzchak love him. But even Yitzchak wasn't fooled. Yitzchak understood the two of them need to work together. So the two of them in Yitzchak's world and Yitzchak's dream are going to work together. They'll be partners. They will be what we later on know to be Yisachar and Zvulun. But what do we find? We find that Esav wasn't willing. We find that Esav was only focused on being a man of the field, and he comes in and he faces his brother and says, I'm exhausted, I'm tired, I just can't do this anymore. I can't live up to this dream, I just can't do this. So Yaakov says, I'll do it. And again, does Yaakov really know what all this means at that point and how much his life is going to change? It is, that's the changing point of his life. As much as you think that, oh, because he stole the bracha, bestowing the bracha, taking the brachot from his father is actually the continuation of this. But this is the action. At this point, he's going to now become a man of the field. Him becoming a man of the field, ironically, then creates Yisachar and Zvulun, which is the reality of what Yitzchak had always dreamed about. For Yaakov's part, as I said, I think I don't want to say his life was ruined, but his life was certainly changed. And because of this, Yaakov finds strength within him that he never imagined. And that's actually the story of Yaakov becoming Yisrael.